got into last week, one of the first questions we asked was, what does it mean to be a New Testament Christian? What does it mean to be a follower of God and a follower of Christ? And if someone was to ask you that question, how would you respond? We talked about how a lot of our responses would be about things that we do. We meet on the first day of the week, and we worship in this sort of way, and we believe in baptism for the remission of sins, and it's all, a lot of it is based on our, basically just things that we do in response to God. But what should our response be? And our response should be that we have a very personal relationship with Him. That's what it's about. Following God, being a follower of Christ, is about a relationship. It's about how we respond to Him because of what He's done for us out of our own heart, out of our own life. How do we respond to Him? One of the last things that we talked about last week was renewing a sense of awe about God. That one of our problems maybe about our relationship with God is that we've become too comfortable. It's become too common, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but too familiar in our lives, that He's become so familiar to us in some ways that we've gotten ourselves maybe in a spiritual rut, and we don't continue our relationship as we move along. I was thinking about this, how to kind of start today, and I was thinking about our relationship with those in our lives. A lot of us have known each other for a long time. And what if we got to a certain point, and maybe we even do this in our relationships with other people, but what if we get to a certain point and we stop building that relationship with one another? I was thinking specifically about a marriage relationship. There are certain things that draw us to one another, certain things that draw and attract a spouse to the person they marry. Sarah, what was it about Blake that drew you to him?
Sense of
humor. Okay. He's very dry and corny sense of humor.
Love it.
And you have a very similar dryness and corny sense of humor. So somebody has to have that kind of sense of humor to be drawn to Blake. I know. We were all wondering, how is Blake going to find somebody? He's very funny. That's right. Chris, what was it that drew you to Samantha?
I would definitely say her purity and her cleanliness and her good attitude.
Okay.
How are you?
What drew you to Bobby?
I've always wondered this question, actually.
I know there's probably a lot of things. Just say, pick one thing that drew you to
Bobby. God was there, you know.
Okay.
Like, for example, like, sometimes I struggle with things. No, I know that, but I know that you always did
about. When you first met him, what drew you to him? That said, that's the guy that I want to marry.
Well, he was very, 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 very nice. And he's
curious. Okay. I can go with that. Very, 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 extremely nice. And that's true.
Yeah.
Probably not all the time. But all the time that I've ever seen. What drew you to Jerry? I know this is a good
he's
question,
fun
too.
And
what?
He's awesome to death.
He's what?
He's fun and he's awesome to death. Even today. So, yeah. We're so happy.
Okay. If we talk about, and you could probably, if I gave you an assignment to list the things that drew you to them, but it goes much, much further, much more beyond that, right? It goes further than that. And once you get to know the person, you find out all their positives, but you also find out what? All their negatives. Johnny, what's one thing that you did not know about Betsy when you married her? That you found out since then. Be kind.
Okay. I feel safe mentioning this because she's mentioned some facts. Mm-hmm. And this is, she doesn't close drawers and doors.
What?
I'm really bad about that.
Yeah. I could have told you that.
Luckily, it doesn't drive me crazy now, but next time she would get, I'm like, why is this door open?
I'm about to get in the drawer again.
Coming back later, why I close it, right? So the further that you develop a relationship with the person that you marry or anyone, the more you find out about them and the more you get to know them. And that relationship builds not only on the positives but also on the negatives, right? It's just one of those things. And you have to learn to deal with the negatives. And usually the positives outweigh the negatives and you can deal with the negatives. In our relationship with God, we looked at a verse last week. It's Romans chapter 1. Verse 20, it says this: "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse." We're going to talk today just about three or four qualities about God that draw us to Him. And not only draw us to Him, but give us a sense of awe about Him. The thing about God is, the more that we get to know Him, the more that we understand Him, we come to an understanding that He has no weaknesses. There are no negatives with God. Even though some people would say that there are negatives with God, such as, well, you know, God sends people, He sends people to hell who don't do the things that He wants. And they talk about certain things. He allows bad things to happen to people. And, you know, there are certain things that people always, and they equate that being with being negative attributes of God, but we understand that that's not the truth. But the more that we get to know God, the more that we understand His qualities, the more that it draws us to Him, the more that it gives us a sense of awe, of wonder about Him. And so we're going to look at just a few of those this morning. And here's one of the, he gives a quote in the book from A.W. Tozer. Anyone know who that is? I've heard of him, but I don't know the. He says this: "What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. Worship is pure or base as the worshiper entertains high or low thoughts of God. For this reason, the greatest question before the church is always God Himself. And the most portentous fact about any man is not what he at a given time may say or do, but what he in his deep heart conceives God to be like. What is God like? What are the qualities about Him that draw me and attract me to Him?" This verse we read in Romans says that they're clearly seen. It's kind of odd the way he puts that too. It says His invisible qualities are clearly seen. That doesn't seem to make any sense, does it? How are something clearly seen that's invisible? We talked about how last week we read some verses about how nature shows God and His power and His majesty and His might, that we could look to the heavens and it says it declares all of His glory. The things that He's created, talked about, you know, the little things, the caterpillar. We talked about the huge things like the galaxies. All those things point to God and His qualities. So one of those statements that doesn't seem to make any sense on first glance.
And yet we do it all the time. How many of you seen the wind?
Okay.
You know it's there, why? The grass moves, the tree moves, things around you react to it, but you don't see the wind. Unless it's a dust storm, you know, and then you still don't see the wind, you see the things that it's interacting with. So it's really not a strange concept. It's just not one we, you know, it sounds funny. How can invisible qualities be clearly seen? But they are all the time.
Okay, that's an excellent point. And I was thinking, as you were saying that, I was thinking about oxygen. You know, how do we know that there's oxygen present in this room?
You're still breathing.
Well, we're all still alive. So there has to be, it has to be here. It's clearly evident. We know that it exists and it's in this room and that it's, it is permeating all of us, but yet we can't see it.
Yes. I wonder if we can see it in others. I see that changes in others. How it affects others besides ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that's definitely true. And I think that's exactly the point that Paul's making in Romans. He's saying these things that are seemingly invisible, they're very evident, right? That we can ever argue with somebody who didn't believe in God? and you talk to them about how you know God exists. And, you know, well, God, we can't see him, we can't feel him, we can't touch him. You know, all the senses that we normally would use in our trying to prove something exists. And then you say something like Rich, and I can see him saying this. What about the wind? Does the wind exist? You can't see it, you can't touch it. I guess you can feel it, kind of. But yet, you can't necessarily prove that there's something there because you can't see it. But you definitely can see the effect that it has on other people. Let's look at some of these that he mentions, and we're just going to kind of bring these up and talk about. We don't have a ton of time today, which is okay. The first one is God is holy. Somebody tell me what the word holy means. Okay. Separated, sanctified, set apart. From what?
Like the ordinary, the above is what I think of when I hear the word. I just think above what I am, above what any creature down here could be. You know, separates from human. You know, there's no human that can be holy.
Okay.
It's absolute purity. You know, holiness is the absence of evil. That's what God is. I mean, he can't be in the presence of sin or evil. What makes it so difficult for us to visualize and obtain, because we're never away from it. I mean, it's everywhere. Everything we see, touch, and do is affected by evil in some way, as much as we would not like it to. I mean, if you've ever influenced it, it's always there. You can't wipe your mind of those ideas and thoughts and things that happen. Where God is without that.
Is it possible for us to be holy?
By ourselves, no, but with God, yes.
Well, are we called to be holy? I mean, over and over in Scripture, especially in Paul's writings, he always challenges his readers to do what? Be holy. Do not be conformed to this world. Wouldn't that be holiness? All these different ideas of being separated, set apart from the things of the world. Don't set your mind on things of this earth, but things above. The whole idea of separating ourselves, being different, being a contrast to the world. We're always challenged to do that. So, is it possible to be holy in this world?
Yes.
I believe it is. But here's the thing. With all these attributes of God, they're always to the ultimate what? Extreme. The ultimate perfect example. The ultimate perfection of that particular attribute. In the Jewish culture, and you can see it throughout Scripture, in order to talk about God's holiness, how would they say it to God? They would say, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord our God." Okay, they would say it three times in emphasis to show that He wasn't just holy; that God is holiness. Right? Passages such that say, "Be holy, for He is holy." It's not just that God is holy, it's that He is what? He is our, He is the standard of holiness, right? He is what we compare ourselves to. He is what we say is the holiness standard that I want to be, that I want to be. Now, will we ever get to that point? I don't think that's possible. And that's why Jesus had to die for us. If I could be holy on my own merit, then Jesus would have never had to come for my sins. But here God is, and He's the ultimate in holiness. Imagine yourself going through a single day without sinning. And we're going to make a pact. Tomorrow, none of us are going to sin the entire day. We come back next week. That's your assignment. On Monday, no sin. How many are going
to
pass the test?
You need to take the day off work.
Take the day off work and sleep all day. Right? Take a drug and sleep. What's that? Oh, well, shoot. Ah.
And then
well, sit down and eat all the way and gluttony. Shoot. It's impossible, right? I mean, it's impossible for us as humans. Okay? How about an hour? I'm going to go 1 hour. I don't know. Is it possible? Maybe. When we're sleeping, you know, maybe when we're sleeping, we don't sin. But it is so against who we are to be holy. It's totally against it. We were talking, I think it was in our high school class, we were talking about how it is our absolute nature to be sinners. It's who we are. God gave Adam and Eve the perfect place to live, the perfect environment for no sin. Right? What did they end up doing? Sinning anyway. He gave them one rule and they broke it. Here, that's just who we are. That's just our nature. And it's so opposite of the nature of God. And so I think about God and I think about how every motive, every thought, every intent, everything that He has ever done is pure. He is holiness. And that's an amazing concept to think about, especially contrasting that with who we are. Second, God is eternal. Anybody ever thought about eternity? Betsy's a math teacher. She understands infinity and all that kind of stuff that she teaches. Like, do you teach that kind of junk? I didn't ever take that. Anything like that. It's too complicated for me. That was like my pat answer on everything. Just put the infinity symbol. Hopefully I get it right. You know, who knows?
What is the infinity?
I want to know the infinity symbol. You drive infinity. It's on the front. Now he knows what that is. I thought that was a sideways eight. So here we are, and picture yourself in heaven for an eternity. And so we're going to be there for 100 years, and then we look around and like, 100 more years. 100 more years. 100 more years. 100 more days. It never ends.
See, there's the problem. You're trying to define it by using a scale. The only thing we understand is time. Infinity or eternity is the lack of time. Because the minute you try and measure it, you lost the concept. It has no beginning. It has no end. Therefore, you can't say it's a year, a minute, an hour, because each of those is a finite section of time. Eternity is beyond that. It has no beginning. It has no end. We keep trying to put the concept into things we understand. It's like trying to understand God. We want Him to be on a level we understand. And yet He says, you can't understand me. I'm beyond your comprehension. And that's what we don't grasp. If we want Him to be on a level that we're comfortable with, instead of us trying to grasp Him on the level He's at.
Yeah, and that is the exact point that He makes in the book. He says it's like looking out at an ocean and taking a pop can and dipping that can in the ocean and saying, this is God. I mean, this is what I can carry with me. This is what I can understand. And so that becomes God to me. Is God, can He be limited like that? We want to, because it's something that I can put my mind around. I can put my brain around. But God can't be limited like that. And one of the things I've got to come to a grasp of in my relationship and knowledge and understanding of God is that I cannot ever fully grasp Him. I can't fully ever understand or comprehend His greatness and the things about Him. But God being eternal is something that we don't understand. Everything we do is limited by our time. 80 years, 85 years, that's a pretty long time for us.
But that was by design. He created these beings that are So I don't see a conflict there. Of course, I'll never understand God.
Right. Well, I don't think there is a conflict. I just think that sometimes in our trying to grasp something that's impossible to grasp, then we just kind of give it up. We just kind of say, well, you know what? I can only understand God X amount. And so I'm going to have my pop can, and it's full of God, and so I'm just going to carry that with me. And this is my relationship with God. This is who God is. But I've got to understand, okay, I carry that with me, but there's a whole lot more there too. And I need to learn to try to continue to grasp, continue to seek, continue to try to build my relationship with God, but yet know that I'll never reach the point that I need to reach. God is not confined by the same constrictions that we are, especially, and time is one of those things. We don't, it's difficult for us, it's not difficult, really that difficult for me to not be bound by time. But for some people, and most of us, even me, we're bound by time. And I only know I have so much time. I only have so much. But yet, God is not bound by time. He doesn't think in time. We think about, why hasn't Jesus come back yet? Why does this happen at this particular time? And why does this happen at this particular time? What is God doing? Well, God's not up there following the years. This is 1,000 years as one day to God. Right? And so he doesn't have the same mindset, the same comprehension of things that we do as far as time goes. There's a verse in Psalm 102 that says this. Psalm 102, verse 12. It says, "But you, O Lord, sit enthroned forever. Your renown endures through all generations." And then verse 24. "So I said, do not take me away, O my God, in the midst of my days. Your years go on through all generations." And there's verse after verse after verse who talk about how God continues when our lives end, His continues, and He just keeps on going.
You know, we were talking last week about the universe, and some of us were talking afterward about, you know, I think that's what Paul was talking about in Romans 1. And we look at the universe, there's no end to it. We've sent satellites out billions of light years away, and there's still stuff there. You go, Rich was talking about stuff that's smaller than the atom. The universe is a evidence, and we look at it, we can see infinity both ways, small and large. God did that, I think, to demonstrate Himself to us. I think it says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and His firmament showeth His handiwork." That infinity, as much as possible in the physical world. And we see scientists trying to figure it all out by time, like Rich was talking about. They are limiting God and the concept of God by the finite, and try to make time evolve us into where we are and evolve the universe into what it is and brings up all these ideas that try to limit God. We can't do that. I know it's hard. We just have to accept it by faith, I guess. But there's a lot of evidence there, is what I'm trying to say, to demonstrate infinity, infinite, eternal.
When you start, do you have something,
sir? Mm-hmm. I'm just scratching.
I can wait.
No.
Good.
No.
You're going to respond to him.
No, that wasn't.
Well, I was going to say, it's a different perspective, in my experience, to the Christian, not understanding God and knowing He's greater than our minds is a big comfort. You know, it's nice to know that while I don't understand, God's got a plan and He's bigger than me. But then when I interact with people that aren't Christians, it's the biggest hindrance to them becoming a Christian. I can't understand God, so I can't accept Him unless you can explain Him to me. It's just a complete polar opposite, and that's, again, us being holy and different from the world. I'm comforted knowing that I can understand God, because it means that, you know, does that make sense, that He's in control? It's a great comfort and relief to know that He's bigger than anything I'm going to face. Whereas to a non-Christian, when I try to talk to him, they're like, well, if you can't explain this to me, He's not worth getting to know. It's just completely polar opposites.
And yet, at the same time, you ask them to explain love. Mm-hmm. they can't do it. They accept that.
They want to accept.
Ask them to explain any emotion. They accept it, but they can't explain it. So they use that as an excuse. I don't want to accept something, so because I don't understand it, I don't want to accept it. And yet, in other aspects of their life, they're willing to do that. So you have to get them over that hurdle of, yes, there are a lot of things in life we don't understand, we accept. This one's just bigger than you've ever dealt with. You know, you can't get your arms around it. You just got to accept it.
Well, on our side of it, like you said, once I open my arms and I release my life to God and I say, okay, I'm trusting you with it. I'm saying, you know what? You're going to do what you're going to do. You're going to allow things to happen that you allow to happen. And I'm going to follow you no matter what. And I don't have to always understand. But have you ever been in a situation to where you had no understanding of what was going on at the time, but then later on you look back and you see exactly what God was doing or was allowing to happen? Why is this terrible thing happening to me? And then you look back and you see, well, God was preparing me for something else. At the time, I don't understand, and it would have been very easy to turn away from God because I don't understand it. But just for those of us that are Christians, and that's part of this relationship with Him, is just opening our arms and saying, no, I don't have to always understand everything. For some people, that's very difficult to release control. I think about a marriage relationship. A lot of marriages don't work because the woman in the relationship is not willing to submit to the husband. You know, submission doesn't mean that you're lesser. It doesn't mean that there's any kind of a negative thought there. It's just, I'm willing to accept you being the leader of our home. And somebody who's not married, maybe, well, I could never do that. I could never let that to happen. But what kind of comfort is it, Sarah, for you to know that Blake is there to kind of take care of things, to be the one that's the protector and all those things in your life, although you can protect yourself just fine. But you said, hey, you know what, I'm going to go along with God's plan, and I don't really understand it maybe, why it works that way. But it's really funny, we have our business meetings here at Echo Hills, and we always announce, everyone's invited to attend the meetings. You know, men, women, anybody can come to the meetings. How many women do we have at our meetings? Melissa. Sometimes Nikki. I mean, Stevie shows up. But the last meeting, it was her and Steve. I go, Becky, well, we're having a business meeting. I'm going to come. She's like, no, you can take care of it. I trust your decisions. I trust what you guys decide to do. Whatever. But it's just the idea of throwing your arms back and saying, you know what, it's God. I'm going to allow Him to work. And, what time is it? Okay, I got a little bit more time. All right. Third, God is all-knowing. Is it a comfort or is it a scary thought that God knows everything about you? What if I were to come in this morning and I were to say, last night I prayed to God that He would allow me to know everything. And my dream came true. So this morning in class, I know everything about you.
And that's scary.
I'm going to go around the room. Okay, Dom. Start telling everything about some of the things I know about you. How many would be in here when I started moving this way? Oh, look at the time. We gotta get started with worship on time. We always get started right at the end. We gotta get going.
But I think it's hard for you to know everything.
That would be a bad thing too, wouldn't it? What kind of a relationship could I have with you if I knew every single thing about you? I have a hard enough time having a relationship with you, and I know just some things about you. Okay? Some of these guys I know a ton about, and I've tried to forget a lot of things from years past, that when we spent a lot of time together in a lot of various situations, right, Matt? And I promised them, hey, that's true. And I promised them, and this saying didn't come around till later, but whatever happens on the mission trip stays on the mission trip, right?
No.
What? You told something about me, Matt?
Oh,
no. That's it. I'm guessing your mom.
We video. What are you talking about?
With Matt, I'd say, all right, Matt, I won't tell on you if you don't tell on me. Right? That would not be a good, I would not want that gift. Okay, that's a gift that I would not want. But is it a comfort or is it a problem that God knows all about us? I think Mickey probably expressed all of our feelings. It's great on some senses, but it's also kind of embarrassing on other senses, right? In our relationships with each other, we'll never know everything about each other because we have the ability to hide the things that we want to hide. And some things I don't want to know. Okay, some things I don't want to know. I just like to go along thinking that everything about you is perfect. And I want you to think the same about me. I know that you all think that.
Of course.
Yeah, but that's the one comforting. The comforting side of that is we know God is love. And in that, His only desire is what is best for us. Our fear with everyone else is the human side is they're going to use it to their advantage at some point. I don't want them to know everything about me because I will feel less about myself in their presence, or I will wonder when they're going to use that information. And because we know God is love, yes, He knows everything, but what He wants is what's best for us. He's never going to use that information to leverage what He wants. He knows it, but He's going to use it to help mold us into what's best. And that's the difference, is, you know, once you realize that He is truly the essence of love, and that what He really wants is what's best for you, not His own interest, not, because He could easily say, everybody's going to be saved, don't worry about what you do, you know, if that's what He wanted. Instead, He wants you to come to the understanding of what's best. And by the way, I already told you what it is, but I want you to come to the understanding of.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's knowing that God's motives and His attitudes are different than ours. Think about this verse in Hebrews 4:13. Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of Him. And here's the last part. To whom we must give an account. God's got all the facts. Right? He's got all the information that He needs. You can't go to God and fool Him. You can't go to God and cover it and cover anything over. God has all the evidence laid out right there. It's not like these trials where He doesn't have all the information before He makes the right decision. He has it all. Of course, when we're standing before God, the number one piece of information He needs about us is what? That we have a relationship with Him. We have a relationship with His Son. But the point is that God knows it all. He has all the knowledge about what we've done. And here's the comforting part. And He still desires a relationship. I don't know if you know everything about me, that you would still want to have a relationship with me. And probably the same for you. If we knew everything about each other, we may not feel the same about one another. But for God, He knows it all, and He still desires a relationship with us. If that doesn't give us some sense of awe about Him, some sense of wonder about Him, I don't know what will. But that idea of Him knowing everything. Next one. We were almost finished. God is all powerful. He can do anything He desires to do. Sometimes we get the idea, and I think in next week's lesson, he compares life to a movie. Is that next week? Life to a movie set. And sometimes we get the idea that we are the center of everything. And we know that that's not the truth when we think about it. I know that I'm not the center of everything, but that's how sometimes we view life. Everything is about God, not about me. Everything that He has done is about Him. Psalm 115:3, our God is in heaven. He does whatever He pleases. Daniel 4:35, all the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as He pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back His hand or say to Him, what have you done? God does what He pleases and He knows what to do. Think about giving that all-powerful sense, that all-power to Chris. What eventually is Chris going to do? He's going to use that power for His own good, for His own gain. But we know that that's not the way God is. God created the things He created. It says He created everything was created by Him and for Him. He knows what He's doing. He uses His power in the right way. He uses His power in all the right ways to make things work the way that they're supposed to work. And only God knows how that works. So everything, when we talk about God's attributes that are clearly seen, it all comes back to the idea that I can understand a portion of it. I can see a portion of what He's doing and what He's done, but I can't understand it all. And so how do I respond to that when I don't understand everything? Either I throw my hands up and I say, okay, I can't understand it, so I reject it. Or I get to a certain point and I say, no, well, I've got this much, and so that's all I need. I don't need any more. And this much right here is what I'm going to hold on to, and I'm just going to move through life with this much. Or do I continue to try to expand my knowledge and relationship with God, knowing I'll never reach the fullness of our relationship? I'm sorry, Blake, but you will never fully know Sarah. Do you know that? I mean, there are going to be some things about Sarah that she does you will never understand. There are going to be some things about Blake you're never going to understand. No matter how hard you try, how long you live with him, he's going to do some things you're just going to go, what's that about? Sometimes we do things that are not even close to what our nature usually is, right? Some things we do. If we have to have that same understanding about God, that we're never going to reach the fullness of our understanding. Even I didn't really get to this part, but what I want you to do for your homework for next week, okay, it's not hard. There are two verses of Scripture that he talks about. The first chapter is Revelation chapter 4. The other chapter is Isaiah chapter 6. Okay? And here's what these passages are. They are, the first one is John standing before God in heaven. Okay? Standing in heaven in his vision and how he describes it. And the other one is Isaiah in the same place and how he describes his venture into heaven. What God allowed him to see and how he described it. And the thing that you're going to find is that the only thing that they could say once they got in the presence of God, they tried to describe it, right? John says it's jewels and it's all this other stuff and all, it gives all these colorful descriptions. But he comes to the conclusion of what? God's holy. He's awesome. He is so majestic. I'm standing before him and I can't describe it. I cannot describe him. I'm looking him right in the face. I'm standing before his throne, and I can't tell you what it's like because I can't describe it. It's not possible for a human to describe it. So next week, before class, take a look at those two passages. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit. We had to get started on 38 minutes. My bad.
Ezekiel chapter 1 tells the same kind of story to you.
What's that?
Ezekiel chapter 1.
Ezekiel chapter 1. He saw the wheel way up in the middle of the air. Chris will be taking over next week, or at least 1 week, maybe 2 weeks. That's how long he goes. He's a little more long-winded than me, so.
Right.
Yeah. Almost have you. It's pretty good for me.
I got a report. I'm got a report against our course.
To show that you can't just say I have a secular.
all the density left there?
Yeah, it
might
be.
Am I getting anyone else?
I'm
getting anyone else. I'm getting anyone else.
So
she
said
she
even
kind of
taking care of it that day.
It
saw
them because
I'm
like,
I'm
going to
my phone.
Yeah,
that's
why Bobby
told me that.
Wow. Well, lately, my parents have been getting stuff at their house. Up at Circle and Mansfield Farms.
Well, that's